when you're evaluating a business such as self-storage, you're going in about how much net operating income it's going to throw off at the end of the day. And so you're having to look at maybe an asset that is not being operated correctly, or the rents aren't high enough, or there's some other things that you can make changes to drive higher rents monthly to drive, in the end, your net operating income higher, which therefore then increases the value of the property.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Jay Bowman is a former buyer of single family rentals, rehabs, and flips, and he has successfully transitioned to self-storage purchases. Jay lives in Kentucky with his wife and two children. Jay, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sam. Appreciate it.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. There's three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
I started here in Louisville, Kentucky. Moved here in 2004 and started by buying my first rental property for $11,000 in a really bad area with one tenant. And I thought, man, this would be great. I'll buy a house and there'll be a tenant in there and he'll pay the rent. And 2 months later, he moved out. And I learned how to be a landlord really, really fast.
Yeah. And would you recommend buying $11,000 rentals?
I would not recommend that. It was also the first rental property I ever got rid of. It took me a while, but I took a beating good enough and I sold it for cash as well at the same time.
Right. Yeah. You have to. I have a story similar to yours in starting out and you go, what was I thinking? What exactly was I thinking? That's really, really fascinating. Tell me, where are you now?
We're based out of Louisville, Kentucky. Oh, this is where we've always been. All of my portfolio is, my single family portfolio is here, but our storage portfolio is spread out. We have a unit, so we have facilities in Indiana, Missouri, and currently one under contract in Louisiana.
Interesting. Okay. So, right. So just to follow this transition, you were in single family. You started off, obviously, you know, in some really small stuff. I'm sure you ran the gamut in single family from, I mean, did you do everything you could possibly do in single family before you gave up on it and said, hey, I'm going into commercial?
Sure. I started buying a small rental and then started wanting to do rehabs as everybody else and their brother did back in, you know, 5, 6, and 7. Got into that and then bought one and 08 hit and couldn't sell it. So we just turned it into a rental. And from there, just continued the fix and flip rentals and then just starting acquiring and going from there. And then after a while, around 2020, the transition to self-storage came available. And after years of construction and heartache and pain, you know, banging your head against a brick wall, we decided to make the transition to self-storage.
Tell me, what was that process like? Because a lot of people want to make that jump. They want to say, hey, you know, they're just like you and just like where I used to be. They want to say, hey, I want to get out of single family, but I don't know how, or I don't have the team, or I don't have the finances, or I don't X, Y, Z, fill in the blank. What were some of the things that you mentally said, I don't maybe yet have the skill set to take that down, that you kind of had to fill in the gaps on? What did that look like for you?
Really, the biggest thing is, you know, the acquisitions is very similar. The only difference is being able to evaluate the property. While you go into a single family, you may say, oh, hey, this is a $100,000 house when it's all well and done. Buying it for 50, it needs 20. Oh, there's a $30,000 spread.
Right.
Easy peasy. That's pretty easy. When you're evaluating a business such as self-storage, you're going in about how much net operating income it's going to throw off at the end of the day. And so you're having to look at maybe an asset that is not being operated correctly, or the rents aren't high enough, or there's some other things that you can make changes to drive higher rents monthly to drive, in the end, your net operating income higher, which therefore then increases the value of the property. So its evaluation is completely different. And I would recommend that anybody who gets into storage learns how to evaluate those properties. Outside of that, we do basic rehab stuff, same thing as houses. You have paint, you have some fencing, you have things like that. And then making cold calls and talking to business owners instead of homeowners, it's still the very similar conversation. It's just the operations of the business is different.
Right. Talk to me, if you don't mind, take a few minutes and go in depth on property evaluation. You know, when you look at a deal, what are some high level things maybe that you guys look at out of the gate and say, hey, of further interest or pass? And then when you take the second round of underwriting, what does that look like? Can you break down those kind of two phases for me?
Yeah, sure. So when we begin, we want to discover what that seller is, what his motivation is, why he's looking to potentially sell. And so we're talking to him about his or her personal situation. You know, a lot of these people are older people. They bought these facilities in the 80s or 90s when they were 30 years old. Well, today they're 60 and 70, and they're still sweeping out units with a broom, and they're still sitting in an office writing physical leases, and they're getting really tired of that. So we start talking to them about what their process looks like, what their facilities look like, you know, what's your unit mix? How much are you charging? What's your occupancy? Are you fenced? Do you have automated gates? Do you have a website? And we start to gather that information and we put that into our analysis, and then we begin to compare it to what's going on in their competitors. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we start with a basic target and we go, hey, who are the competitors within 0 to 1 mile, then 1 to 3, and then 3 to 5? Rarely we're going to go out of 5 miles because storage is very a local business. Nobody says, you know, unless you're in the middle of nowhere, man, I'm going to drive 25 miles to go to this storage facility. You don't have a lot of that. Yeah. So that's our initial underwriting. And if we can see that there's value to be had there, we are more than happy to talk to that seller about making an offer on that. Once we do that, that second round, we're going to go to a site visit, because you can't attend, you can't go visit these things. You know, I'm in Kentucky. I'm not going to drive to Memphis where you are to go see a facility just because I have a conversation with somebody. So we need to get the details first. And then once we have that property under a purchase and sale agreement, we will actually go visit the physical property, do a walkthrough, identify any other issues that we may have, and move forward from there. Because we need to be able to put our eyes on that property and evaluate physically.
Right. Sure. Yeah. You want to make sure that there's no unknowns, maybe that when after you're under the purchase and sale agreement, when you get there, you might find some things that were lurking that weren't disclosed. But then I guess on top of that, let's ask, because obviously this is all net operating income driven. That's how you decide this is how much we can pay for the property. How do you determine in an efficient manner what going rent rates are without surveying the 1, 3, 5 mile every, you know, potential competitor in the 1, 3, 5 mile radius? Is there a quicker way to do that than just actually getting on and writing them all down on a spreadsheet and figuring out what that looks like?
No. I keep that in mind. No, we want to talk to those people. We need to know what these other people are charging and how full they are. So if all of your competitors are 100% full and they're bragging about how they haven't raised their rates in the last 10 years and we're just charging ahead, we know that there's room to grow. How much room to grow? And how high you can raise those rates is a different question. So if somebody has a 10 by 10 for $70 and everybody's charging $70 and everybody's 100% full, well, then we know $70 is too low. You know, we want to see roughly anywhere between 87 to 93% occupancy on a unit mix. And so that way, as these people move out, if they have cheaper rates, we want to be able to charge a higher rate per month for that unit size. What that is, 75, 80, 85, what that market is willing to bear is the risk that you take. So we never like to see that, you know, you have a lot of people who are 90% full and everybody's charging the same rates. There's really no room to run there. You know, unless operationally you are looking to continue to drive, you may drive your clients out. If everybody's charging 80 and then I step in, I go, well, we're going to charge 95. We could easily lose those clients and drop below a threshold that we were really comfortable with.
So say that again. If you see that it is 90% full and everyone is charging the same rates, you say that there's no rent growth possible. Is that what you just said? Did I hear
that? That's us. Yeah. So we're going to look at that and go, well, should we go in and should we charge an extra $5? Well, if somebody else has 10% left to fill, we may be pushing some of those people out. It's usually not everybody's running for the door, but you're always going to have those people. A lot of people just call and shop. And if you have three competitors that are really close by and those are what your comparables are, you need to proceed with caution in that scenario.
Right. Yeah. Because I mean, if you're shopping and you know, you're 10 or 15 bucks more a month, and they're only 90% full, that means they can just as easily absorb that person who's looking for a place to go. Whereas conversely, if you shopped and you said that, hey, they're 100% full and they're all charging the same rates, then you say, hey, wait, there's room to grow.
Yes, exactly. Because everybody, it's full and they're all just taking waiting lists, waiting for somebody to move out. Well, if we raise $10 and we have 90% of our people stay, we're happy with that. We've increased our revenue pretty dramatically. And then if there's everybody else is still full and they're charging the same rate, we just go up a little bit more, but we're the only ones with units available. And so we're driving the market at that point.
Do you just kind of test this as in, you know, take a few units and say, okay, we're going to put this out there at $10 more per month and just see what happens. How do you adjust that dynamic pricing or testing model?
Sure. The websites that we use, the software that we use, we are able to set that. And so we will take, depending upon how many units there are, we will take that and say, okay, once we hit a 87% occupancy, we are going to raise the rate of this unit, let's say a $70 unit, 10% to $77. We're going to raise it $7. Oh, but if it fills up a few more units and we hit 93% occupancy, we're going to raise it another 15% because now we're pushing that rate higher. And then once, if that starts to fill, we're going to look at all those people who may be paying 70, but now the market rate is shown to be 85, and we're going to start to move them up to the market rate. And maybe we don't raise them up immediately. We do it in a stage over a few months, but we'll go from 70 to 77 or 70 to 80, keeping them there. And then we notice storage has a high sticky factor. We may not see a whole lot of people leave, and then we'll just push them straight to market and then begin that process all over again.
Right. That's really, really intriguing. What is that conversion ratio or percentage of someone, maybe they came in at 70, how many of those people that you then raise to 85 actually stick around? Or, and then how many of them do you find at lease renewal end up going somewhere else?
You know, that would require a lot of asking why those people are leaving. We don't do that. When you've got 300 units in a facility and everybody's leaving, you know, a lot of times it's just because their usage is done. Really, you're going to find a lot of people leave if you buy a value add facility at the very beginning and people are there for the value, there for the cheap rates. They're just looking to put grandma's dresser somewhere. Right. And you were the cheapest in town. And when you step in and you clean up that facility and you go, $40 rates going to $70, you're no longer that value. That's not our client anyway. We're not looking for that client. There's another facility a couple miles away that doesn't do as great of a job. It's a little rougher facility. You're like, hey, they're right down the road. You can head over there, but we're going to replace that $40 person with a $70 person. That's what we're looking for. When you have people who are operating it poorly, you know, we're going to go in and make value there. Or if you have rates that are really good, maybe the market rate is 60, but they've got a lot of people at 50, it's not really value. They just haven't done their job, the operational side, in raising the rents to the market because they're always afraid somebody's going to leave. We're happy to invite them to leave because we know somebody else is going to fill them at 10, 15, 20, 25% higher. Right.
What do you, or how much time do you build in for, we're going to call it the lease up phase or the release phase when you take over a facility?
Yeah. So we usually look our market and the facilities where we've had to experience that, it's been about 2.5% a month. That's a pretty good rule of thumb for us so far. So, and I'm going to be really bad at doing the math here. If we're at 65% occupancy when we take over a facility, we would expect in 10 months to achieve 90% at 2.5% a month. That's really that's what we shoot for when we do our pro formas. And so say that, like, we know this one, it's sitting roughly at about 40 to 45% occupancy, and we're going to go in. It's going to take us a while to get that thing full, but you have to go in and you have to begin advertising. You have to set up the website. You have to get the Facebook ads out there for these people who are searching for places to put their stuff. And a lot of these older facilities that are run by people who've had them for 30 or 40 years, they're just not doing that. And so we're going to go in and take advantage of that opportunity.
Does it concern you when you find a facility that's 40 to 50% occupied? Like, how do you know when you buy that, hey, I can actually turn this around? I mean, other than just going, hey, I think I can, or, you know, I mean, what are some things when you look at those facilities and say, hey, wait, there is unmet demand here? And I mean, walk me through that. That would seem kind of intimidating.
Sure. So when we have other competitors surrounding us and we see those competitors are 90 to 100% occupied, and then we're like, well, wait a second, you know, the old Sesame Street thing, one of these things is not like the other. And we're going, it looks good. It's in the right location. Everybody else is full. So what's wrong here? And you have to look at that and wonder why. Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious when they're not answering the phone, there's no website, they're not running ads. You have some management that's just not, or owners who are not doing their job and are very hands off or don't care. And so at that point, we are very, very confident that we can go in and increase that occupancy.
Got it. Jay, this is absolutely awesome. What's been one of the biggest surprises you found personally going from single family into storage?
The biggest surprise, and that's a really good question. Had I known the power of owning a business over owning real estate, probably would have made this transition sooner. The operational side is, while single family, you're still a landlord, you're managing people, your oven is breaking, the lawn needs mowing, all of that. I didn't realize how much I would enjoy the operational side or the investment side of actually buying a business that comes with real estate as opposed to just buying real estate itself.
Man, that's fantastic. Jay, I've certainly enjoyed this today. Thank you for taking the time here to come on. Next question for you. What is one mistake you can help our listeners avoid and how would you avoid it?
Education. You absolutely want to, before you go out buying little bitty facilities, we really work in the tertiary markets. We're not buying in the middle of Louisville. We're not buying in the middle of Memphis. You know, Class A facilities are not our thing. We look for tertiary markets, Class B facilities, not trash, but it's not super high end. We're looking for value in those markets. And to just go out and start buying that, it's like handling a gun. You got to be educated. You have to understand what it is that you are actually purchasing. It's not just people are going to tell you how passive self-storage investing is. And whoever tells you that does not know what they're talking about. There is operations to this, and you have to understand what that is and how to do that effectively to be able to manage that business.
Right. I love that. What is one way you're making the world a better place?
You know, when we go in and we buy a facility, we immediately contact some charities and we donate a couple of units to them. Sometimes if we don't have a fenced facility, we're also contacting local police departments. We're donating units to them as well. I'm not going to lie, it serves a double purpose when, you know, you're saying, hey, we'll give you a couple of units if you're happy to drive by once a week and do that. But we always want to make sure that we contact those charities and we want to make sure that they have a unit or two and begin to work with them.
Man, that's awesome. I love that. Jay, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can find us at gobeyondstorage.com. That's gobeyondstorage.com. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at Jay Bowman and on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Jay, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.